You're listening to How Yoshi Did It Podcast with Yoshi Obayashi. Don't you ever Okay, this is August 24th, 2016, and I'm here with Rosie Transplays, and I swear this is the last time she's doing it. I have one more episode with Brad Upton, Alicia Wood. I'm doing mine. I'm going to do Europe. I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow, and surprise guest. I don't even know if it's going to be a surprise guest. If I can get the guest I'm trying to get, the last episode will be by myself. Just quick thanks for all the people supporting the show for all these years. So anyway, Rosie, thank you for doing it. Before we jump in, everyone needs a family member, colleague, a friend, or someone important that keep people in check. And Rosie, I have to say, you're definitely one of those handful of people. Listen, just one hand of people that I trust. I really appreciate you did that, because you're very rational and honest, and then not to mention it really helped that we also hate the same people. So
I don't know if I'm rational and keeping you in check, or if I'm just co-signing on your anger and aggression.
No, but I know I'm not an easy person to deal with, and you're always been good. And recently I was reading something on Dr. Kissinger, and I think you're too young to remember, but Dr. Kissinger, on behalf of Richard Nixon's administration, we're dealing with this incredible diplomat named Mai Van Vo. He, I have to say, he is Tyrion and Tywin Lannister of diplomacy, and he fooled Kissinger. I mean, Kissinger's not a dumb guy, but I think when I was reading this recently, I think this experience really helped Kissinger and Nixon to deal with Chinese. They're not easy to people to deal with. But the North Vietnamese had no interest. They had no intention of making deals with them. They knew that it's a matter of Americans were dealing with two more enemies, which is public opinion and time. They knew that eventually Americans will leave, But this diplomat outfoxed, outsmarted, and outfooled Henry Kissinger, and you got to hand it to the Vietnamese people. They
have you seen Fog of War?
Hmm.
Have you seen Fog of War?
Long time ago. I just watched.
It was funny that you mentioned that, because we just saw that, and
he's a war criminal, as far as I'm concerned. That's what my uncle used to say, because they sent him to Vietnam War.
It was funny, because he was talking later on, I guess, he was talking to...
We're both talking about, if you don't know history, Robert McNamara.
Yeah. McNamara was talking to one of the Vietnamese diplomats. I don't know if it was Mai Vo, but he was saying, it kind of made me laugh. He said, "Why did you think we were going to make a deal with the Chinese? Have you ever read a history book in your life?"
Yeah.
It just made me laugh.
They just assume, look at Asians, and then figure, they're like, they think unison, I don't know why they made that assumption, because I don't think Asian people necessarily make an assumption that every white person get along with every white person.
But don't you think that the U.S. government should have done some mild fact-finding and research before jumping into a major war? I mean, I'm happy the war happened, because otherwise I wouldn't be in America.
Sure.
But, so I guess, that's the positive. But it's just silly that they would spend millions and millions and millions and kill so many people and lose so many lives and go send innocent people to be killed and innocent Americans to be murderers without doing some basic historical research on the area.
Yeah. Well, when Lyndon Johnson ran for office, I didn't even know he was going to be a political and history podcast, but when he ran against Barry Goldwater, he was worried that, Barry Goldwater is... serving military and conservative and really tough on foreign policy, and I think Lyndon Johnson didn't want to be seen weak. So he pretty much cornered himself from the campaign that we're going to go really hard at the North Vietnamese and no surrender mentality. And I think Robert McNamara, who, you know, I don't know which automobile company he worked for, but yeah, so he and other clony like him, what he was in the group, they were like the, I don't know, what would they call them? The geniuses, right? They're the best and brightest.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that's kind of pejorative now because they're incredibly smart, but they...
Well, they weren't that smart if they didn't do basic research on the area before sending us to war.
Yeah, and they didn't know the Vietnamese. They don't know the history and what motivated them. I think the basic fear, if anybody listening to this, and like I'm not an expert at all, but the fear was, you know, they're concerned about the mainland China, North Korea, and this domino effect of communist red just spreading the rest of the world. So if you let one country turn red, it's like a domino effect. Not knowing that the Vietnamese and Chinese have been going at it for thousands of years, you know, and well, they're still going at it, you know, Spotley Island, all the South Sea, China, yeah, right now.
I know, my dad goes crazy about that stuff. I think that's kind of happening right now with this fear of Islam taking over the West. You know, there's this famous quote, which I'm blanking on who said it, but it was, if you ever learn anything from history, it's that we never learn anything from history. So yeah, we keep making these same mistakes over and over and over and over again. Same, you know, actions, different war, same actions, different people, same sure actions. It's like the same thing over and over again. It kind of makes me not believe in evolution. It's like we're not evolving. We're just doing the same thing.
Yeah.
As a society, it's kind of sad, actually. And now with the whole Trump-Hillary thing, I don't know.
We shouldn't waste time talking about them. Because I just think, I mean, I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Let's not waste time talking about them.
I could be wrong, but you know, I just think, I mean, there's many things I was wrong about this election, but I still think, I'm pretty fucking sure that California is going to Hillary. Would I bet my life on it? No, but I'm 95% certain.
Well, he's slipping in the ratings, but I don't...
Anything could happen, you know, but state of California, as far as what I could do if I decide to vote, I don't think I'm going to vote, but if I did vote, I'll probably vote for Johnson, for Libertarian. I know they said, how could you not vote for Hillary? Trump is worse or whatever, but it just makes me sick to think that's the two
choices. There are other candidates. There's Johnson, there's Jill Stein. Now, a lot of people are afraid Jill Stein's going to take the Bernie vote.
I don't even know who that is, but I'm just...
She's the Green Party candidate, and her politics are very similar to Bernie's. She's a doctor.
You know, I'm probably...
There's another woman running as well, Yoshi.
Yeah. I just think... God, this just is... I'm just dumbfounded by the whole thing, but... I will say that I think people vote if people are voting for Trump, I don't necessarily, because some people say they must be racist, and I don't necessarily believe that.
I don't think that's true, and I don't necessarily think Trump is racist. I think he's
playing this character.
I think he's playing a character. I think he's inspiring a lot of people who are racist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a racist. In fact, I went back and watched that speech where he said that Mexicans were rapists, and he didn't actually say Mexicans were rapists. What he said, by the way, I'm not defending Trump and I'm not a Trump supporter, but
he's saying they're very aggressive lovers.
No, what he said was that the Mexico is keeping all of their best people and sending their worst over here.
Right.
That's what he said.
Or the worst will be going to prison, and so they'd leave the country.
Yes. Yeah. So he wasn't saying all Mexicans are rapists or that Mexicans are rapists, but the language that he uses incites people, and it makes people angry, and people make generalizations.
Yeah.
And he said a bunch of other crazy stuff. He's doing it, obviously, for the ratings. But he never actually said Mexicans are racist, and he never actually said many things. It's blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a Trump supporter. but he definitely knows how to get the ratings because people love watching him.
Sure. I just think if I was a working class white person, it must have been very, very frustrating for a long time because nothing has ever happened to them. And
what do you mean nothing has ever happened to them? What does that mean?
Nothing good has happened in the last, you know, I think if you're a minority, you expect to get certain kind of help from Democratic presidential runners. But I think if you're a working class white person, Appalachia and places like that, I don't think there's a lot of I don't think they've been helped or recognized that they're also the group of people who should be helped too, you know. So I think there's a plenty of people who don't even like Trump and frustrated by the whole thing. They just vote for him because they're just frustrated by the whole thing.
They're done.
Yeah.
They're done with the system.
Hmm?
They're just done with the system.
Yeah.
The political system.
Because I forgot the guy, something Vance. He just wrote this book called Hillbilly Elegy. And I ordered the book. I was hoping I'd receive it by today and read it. But I think he's from Ohio, lived a life of hillbillies. And I don't even know what those terms exactly means. But sounds like he was a smart one, did a military, Ohio State, then went to law school, Yale or something. Now he works for a top-notch company in Silicon Valley. But he grew up from very, very sad, very violent, very full of tragedy. And his mother was addicted to heroin or something. And he gave this story where she was driving him someplace far, and she literally told him, like, I'm going to just drive really fast, slam against the wall, have both of us killed and stuff like that, you know. But it's a New York Times bestseller, and he was saying that the thing he was saying, like, it was very reasonable to me. Like, if you're a white person, you're neglected, and if you're poor and you're stuck in those places, how do you get out of it, you know? Those Rust Belt places and stuff too. So I think when people are frustrated, they haven't been heard, sometimes you pick an extreme candidate, so at least they feel like they're being heard, you know?
Well, I think a lot of people like that, they feel frustrated mm-hmm. because they keep seeing all these policies for affirmative action, mm-hmm. helping minorities and helping trans people,
yeah.
because supposedly the issue is that the government needs to help represent those who are not as represented, have a smaller voice, right?
Yeah.
But the assumption is that if you're white, you have white privilege, and not every white person is rich.
No, not at all.
It's like, that's not true. But here's the problem with democracy. You can't have a true democracy because a true democracy requires everyone to have a level playing field and be truly educated. Otherwise, you have a mass of uneducated, ignorant people that can be manipulated.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on now. And as you can see, most of the laws lean towards supporting people who are wealthy and the elites.
Yeah.
Because those are people who make the laws, or those are people who get elected. Those are people who have money to hire lobbyists and to lobby for their causes and stuff like that. But
and if politicians know the specific groups never vote, they're gonna
ignore them.
They're gonna ignore them.
They were even saying that it's okay mm-hmm. to ignore, you know, certain poor parts of the population because most of them don't vote, or illegal immigrants, they can't vote. It's like, who cares about illegal immigrants because you can't vote? They can't vote.
Right.
Or who cares about felons, or who cares about these other people because they can't vote, so it doesn't matter. And a lot of politicians are just catering towards groups that are going to give them money for re-election in the future anyway.
Yeah, and I think if I have to make wild guess, I still think Hillary's going to win. But win or lose, Trumpism is going to last. I think if he wins, he's a president. If he loses, I think that it's not like that frustration, anger is going to just disappear because you have Hillary, you know. I think it really changed.
I don't envy Hillary. I think she's going into a horrible situation right now. This is not the time for her to be president, as far as I don't think she's going to come out of it with bells and whistles and parades and fireworks.
I don't even know why people want to be president.
It seems very stressful.
I mean, I'd rather be NFL commissioner. They make $25, $30, $40 million a year. It's so entertaining. You don't have to deal with foreign nightmare. And, you know, it's, I don't know. It's very interesting that, I mean, I say this all sincerely. I wish Obama could run for third term. Isn't it weird? Like, if somebody told me 10 years ago, not only are we going to have a black president for two terms, but I would like that person to run for third because two white people running for the office are so awful. Are so fucking awful. And we were so lucky because he was such an even temper. I don't necessarily agree with everything that he did, but people... I think he is a very good father. Like, those two girls, you never hear, like, shoplifting, using painkiller, got pregnant, you know what
cocaine.
I mean?
Cocaine.
Yeah. In fact, actually, Trump's kids, like Ivanka Trump, I think they're good kids. I think it's probably because he wasn't around too much. That's what I think. I think his wife or wives did a really, really good job. I think his kids are good. And
I would vote for Ivanka.
I mean, she just seemed like a level-headed, not to mention she's really fun to look at, but...
she's beautiful. She seems really intelligent and level-headed. And she's actually doing a really good job of being politically savvy as far as when they interview her and ask her about her father's opinions, mm-hmm. she never agrees with them. She is very good at being vague and kind of saying... You know, I support him with whatever. She's very good at being a supportive daughter without supporting his policies, if that makes any sense.
She's supportive.
She's diplomatic.
She's supportive without throwing her principles away. And she's very savvy about
By the way,
that.
Did you know her and Chelsea are like really good friends?
Oh, not right now, but not right now.
Apparently their husbands are work at, you know, her husband does real estate and then Chelsea's husband works at a New York hedge firm, so I guess they're in the same circles.
Yeah. And so, she's very flexible. Like, her husband's a very successful hedge fund, whatever, and her in-laws are very successful too, and she converted to Judaism.
And, no, her husband is real estate.
But her husband's also Jewish, and she converted to Judaism.
So. And so did Chelsea.
Oh, did she convert too?
Her husband's Jewish too.
So did she convert?
I think she converted.
Wow.
They're like very similar.
And that's how Israel ran America. Is that right? They both convert. I mean, I know Ivanka did it because I remember that.
I can Google it, but I know Chelsea's husband had a yarmulke on at their wedding.
Wow.
He looks like super Jewy too.
The real world, the Mossad. So anyway, thank you. I have to say, out of all the different Asian groups, boy, Niall Ferguson, who wrote this book about part one, a book on Kissinger, and he was talking about how even Kissinger was fooled by, you know, Mai Van Vo. I don't know how you say it, but it's just the Vietnamese, you know. Americans beat Japanese, they tie with the North Koreans, and they got beaten by the Vietnamese, you know, so.
There was a really great quote from a documentary I saw from a Vietnamese fighter that said, the thing the Americans didn't understand is, we can't leave, we live here.
Well, it's the same thing. In Afghanistan, they know, they've seen what happened in Vietnam. Americans, we don't have a stomach for long-term fight. And yes, has there been successful occupation? Sure. Korea. They finally become democratic country in like late 80s. But that's one success out of other, how many occupations?
And
you know?
Who wants to be occupied? It's like, think of yourself as an mm-hmm. American soldier. Who wants to be over there for years and years and years and years? People want to go home.
And people in Afghanistan knows that we're going to leave. They know that. This is a narrative that they're quite familiar with. So, you know, if you listen to this podcast month from now, 3 months from now, 2 years from now, believe me, within a month of hearing this conversation, either month before or month after, there probably was a bomb in Afghanistan. They just know that we don't have a stomach for it. Or
And we have our
own. We haven't had one in a long time.
And it's very unpopular. It's very unpopular to be going off fighting wars when we have issues at home.
Yes.
And that was what happened with Vietnam. And you know, other than people's fear of Islam or terrorism or Sharia law or whatever people are freaked out about, it's like we can't just spend billions and billions and billions and more people to die for
sure.
For what? There's no point.
So Lyndon Johnson, massive success in civil rights movement, 64 and 65. But what prevented him from running for that second time? Vietnam. you know, before, prior to Tet Offensive in like 68, I think, Robert McNamara, all the cabinet members, all this say this wise old man who knows foreign policy, they said we could win it. After Tet Offensive, everyone even changed their position, said this is just not a winnable war.
Yeah, we got to get out of here.
They were saying,
don't you think it's kind of ironic, though, that our current system kind of mirrors the 60s? We have massive protests, racial protests, mm-hmm. with the Black Lives Matter movements and other movements.
Yeah.
These massive racial issues happening right now. It's like, shouldn't we be past this? It's been, what, 40 years, 50 years now? We're still doing the same shit we did 50 years ago? I don't understand what's going on.
I still have to say, things are a lot better 50 years ago.
Things are a lot were better, or they're better now?
They're better now.
Yeah.
I really do believe that.
But why do you think people are so...
But the media makes it seems like it's a lot worse than it really is.
I agree with that. But why do you think there's so many angry people? It's, if you look at the statistical data, the amount of, for example, innocent people that are killed by police or innocent people of color, maybe it's unproportional to white people. Maybe, right?
Yeah.
It probably is. I don't know the statistics. But the amount of people killed by police innocently is a very small percentage compared to other... There's more traffic accidents. There's more... What do you think the hoopla's about? I don't understand. Why do you think now? Why do you think people are getting so angry now? I mean, it's like a terrorist attack, right? People are so upset about terrorism and terrorist attacks. The statistical chance of getting hit by lightning is higher than... being attacked by terrorists.
Right. It's a emotional reaction. We remember, I give this example all the time. If you're swimming, the chance of you getting attacked by shark is 1 in 3 million, 3.5 million or something. But if it's happening to you, the number doesn't mean shit. You know what I mean? It's an emotional reaction. I do think more people probably get killed in car accident. And more black people kill other black people, just like more white people kill other white people. But
that's true too. That's true. That's a statistical that's been quoted many times in the media with, you know, black on black crime. Yet, what is this?
People had a notion and the whisper that shit was happening where police are abusing their power. But because of cell phones more available now, I think even most pro-police people are, I mean, it's just obvious, there's just like a really terrible feeling about the whole thing. Now, having said that, you think police kill black people and it's terrible, and it is terrible, but you wait till there's no police in this country and see how many more people be killed. Police are necessary, and I don't want to blanket make a statement saying all police, but there's definitely history of abuse and the culture need to change. Now, how to do that, I have no idea. I ask all the smart people, like, how do you change culture? And you know, about a month ago when there was a shooting in Dallas, I read that if it's true, Dallas Police Department is one of the few places in the country that actually making
changes,
reforms. Yeah, reform. So that was a very sad thing, you know. But I think, I hope.
What I think is the solution is, I heard an amazing interview.
No more white people and black people in America.
Only Asians. I heard an amazing interview with a police officer in Alaska.
Yeah.
A police force in Alaska.
Yeah.
And the sheriff was talking about how they don't carry weapons. They only have tasers, I think, and billy clubs. Mm-hmm. And that people, and he's had to confront people with weapons because it's Alaska. People have weapons there for hunting. And it makes their police force forced to learn more communication skills.
Sure.
And to assess people more and to talk them down more,
yeah.
instead of escalating.
Yeah.
Right now, I think the problem is not the killing of black people or whatever. I think it's the aggressive escalation. Because even, first of all, I had three experiences with police officers, I think maybe four, all four extremely negative. I'm not a black person. I'm an Asian woman, the least threatening kind of person out there.
Except when we're driving.
And I've had four horrible, horrible
Were they all in California?
One was in Louisiana and the rest were in California. The first one mm-hmm. was in high school. I literally, I'm not even exaggerating, was skipping school to study for a test.
Yeah.
Like I was skipping school to study. This police officer called me for truancy or something.
Yeah.
And he was just an asshole. He threw me in the car. He was very aggressive. He accused.
He grabbed you out of the car?
I was walking. I left school.
You were just walking home.
I was just walking because I was going to study because they had a job fair or something in the morning, so we didn't have to go to class. So I had to study for a class in the afternoon, so I skipped school to study. I went across the street to the grocery store to buy something because it was early in the morning, like 9, and so everything was closed. So I went to get a drink or something.
Sure.
Somebody saw me. I mean, and I'm an Asian girl, so at the time I was in high school, I probably looked like I was 11.
Yeah.
So they knew I should have been in school. They called, I guess, the police or somebody, because I obviously was so young looking and by myself. And a clerk in the store accused me of stealing because I had a book bag.
Yeah.
The police officer came, they looked through my stuff. I hadn't stolen anything.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have anything to book me under, so they booked me for truancy. The police officer was extremely aggressive, accused me, still had the storyline of accusing me of stealing, even though I didn't steal anything and nothing was caught on me. And he was a total dick. He pulled out his paycheck and like showed me his paycheck and was like, this is what happens when you work hard. And like was just like a total asshole. Like there was no reason for him to treat me like that. I was obviously like a little Asian girl and I was crying because I was scared.
Do you think... I don't think there's anything wrong with saying like, okay, we made a mistake. Have a good day.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing. Or let me drive you back to school.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have skipped school. Let me drive you back to school. Instead, they took me downtown. Literally, I'm not exaggerating. I looked like I was 12. I was probably 13 or 14 at the time, but I probably looked 12. Threw me in the police car, took me to the truancy center. I had to call my parents. I was crying. I mean, he really was mean to me. I had another issue where I was pulled over in California. The police officer, it was a ticket trap.
Yeah.
He claimed that I ran the stoplight. I actually explained to him that it was impossible for me to run the stoplight because I was making a left turn onto oncoming traffic. He then changed his story and said he saw me yield but not stop. I then told him, no, there's no way I could have not stopped. I would have gotten hit. He then said, it's too late. I already wrote the ticket. Go fight it. I went to court to fight it. And then he lied under oath to the judge and said that never happened.
Yeah. And so when they do stuff like this, they lose confidence in the public.
Oh, yeah. So I've had four, and I had two other similar situations like that. Another one where the police officer was extremely aggressive and was yelling at me. And Yoshi, look at me. I'm like the least threatening person. So out of four instances I've had with cops, all four of them have been extremely negative. So I don't think it has anything to do with being black. I just think the culture, like you said.
And oh my God, I think I might have to change the batteries or something in a second or two.
All right, let's change the battery.
But before I forget, I remember one time, I was parked at Target or something like the Washington State, and the police said, hey, you need to pick up your trash. Excuse me? And there's a pile of cigarette butts outside of the door of my car. I don't smoke cigarettes, right? I just happened to park where
there was cigarettes. Yeah,
there's a pile of them. He said, like, oh, officer, I don't smoke. Hey, you don't need, I don't know. I don't know if he accused me of lying, whatever, but eventually, make the story short, he made me pick it up, whole thing, right? I don't even smoke. What happened if I grab it and I like the smell and I start smoking a cigarette and I have a cancer? But I couldn't believe, like, after a while, you realize, like, you know, like that shit I was watching. Did you ever watch that thing on Netflix, Making of a Murder or
yes,
whatever?
Yes.
I only watched the first episode. But I'll pause for a second, change the batteries, and then we'll start talking. And let me get a glass of water too. But we'll talk a little bit of that. Okay, I'll be back. Bye. Okay, I'm literally back two, three minutes changing the batteries. Everything's cool. So anyway, I didn't watch the series. I don't know if I'm going to watch the whole damn thing.
It's good. It's good. Making a Murderer, very good on Netflix.
And I know I shouldn't have read. I read a little too much, which later on he got accused of something else again, right?
Don't. Just watch it, Yoshi.
So anyway, I just watch.
By the way, can I just clarify that I have had one positive experience with law enforcement, and I know some people who are law enforcement who are good people. I'm not saying that it's...
A lot of them are good.
I'm just saying that it seems to be a system-wide or cultural issue within the police force that there's some unnecessary aggression and unnecessary power issues. If you're dealing with a crazy person that's talking to themselves or an aggressive, you know, criminal or gangster, yes, I understand being aggressive, but I am a petite Asian woman. There's no reason to be aggressive with me at all. I obviously don't have weapons, and I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, of course, for every shitty things that happen to us, we say, but there's plenty of time that police don't get credit for, you know. They just don't get credit for. So
I'm sure there's a lot, but my point is that there is probably some systematic issues, as we talked about earlier.
And, you know, I've said this before, what that kid, who I don't remember the kid's name, in Ferguson got... After looking at some of the periodicals, I'm inclined to think, I would have said in other podcasts, that I believe the cop, you know, that kid, before he got shot, I think he got shoplifting at the grocery store. Remember that? And when he got caught by this guy who looked like Russell Peters' uncle, pushed him down. Anyway, that's not a reason to shoot anyone, but I do think he got shot inside of the car fighting a cop. And what was interesting, if I remember right, the dad said the police need better training and things like that. And I agree. Like, any profession you're in, you could have more training if it's good training. But since the father of the victim, so-called victim, asked, I could also want to ask him, is it possible that you could have more good parenting skills? You know what I mean? Because he's a big black kid, got caught shoplifting or stealing. And he pushed someone old enough to be, I'm sure, his father. He pushed him down. So I think the criticism should go both ways.
You know? Should go both ways. And not just that, but have you ever seen that Chris Rock video, how not to get arrested or beat up by the cops or something like that? It's really funny. We'll watch it. So Chris Rock has this video. I think it's called How Not to Get Beat by the Cops.
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny. He talks about how if you're a black man, you need to put your hands up if they're told to put up. Don't be ghetto. Don't act, you know, ignorant around police officers, and you won't. It's pretty funny.
And my friend Frederick's family, the mom said, I don't care if the police give you being rude to you and being disrespectful to you. You know, as a black mother living in America,
face
racism in Louisiana. Fred's mother grew up there. You just say, you never fucking give the police reason to shoot you. You just follow, you know, of course you're emotional and you don't like being treated like that. And I can't even imagine what it feels like. But I mean, if I was a black person, I had a black kid, or I'm exactly how I am, and I just have to adopt a black kid or something. Especially a boy, that's the
first thing you would tell him.
I'm just
right?
going to hammer that shit into that kid's head, you know.
So. But I don't like when people say, "Well, you know, white kids don't have to have this fear." White kids, look, there's certain harsh realities in our world.
That's one of them.
There's a lot of harsh realities in this world. Everyone has to deal with them. There are certain stereotypes that white people have.
Yeah.
There are certain stereotypes that black people have. There are certain stereotypes Asians have, Latinos have. That is one of the harsh realities of this world.
Yeah.
And to me, a lot of people, they don't live in reality. They live in la-la land. It's like, I don't care if it's unfair. Life is unfair. I think the problem is that we teach our kids that life is supposed to be fair, and then they grow up getting angered at the world. You know, that happened to me. I went to a gifted school, and I kind of was spoiled in that way, and then I had to deal with idiots in real life. You know what? I would have preferred not going to a gifted school, because I would learn how to deal with people with more street smarts or people with other. To me, I didn't feel that going to a gifted school helped me in life, because life is not like that. Life is a mix of people from every IQ level, every personality level, every background level. And I did go to, you know, a very rough middle school, but life is unfair. And I think that the sooner you teach that to kids, you know, don't be a dick about it, but kids need to learn that there's certain harsh realities.
Going back, because I haven't watched the series entirely. So Making a Murder it's worth watching it.
It's worth watching, Yoshi, but it's a binge watch. So you got to have a lot. Maybe if you can download it or something and then watch it on the plane to Europe.
I have plenty of other stuff to watch now that grace of kindness of your husband fixing the damn computer for the 9 times. I don't know why it does that, but he fixed it again. So I have a computer in overseas and like.
But why do you keep breaking it?
Yeah, but I didn't do it. one before this fix up, he just told me, I don't know, I just turned it off and everything was fine. Well, it doesn't work like that for me. So anyway,
no, he did do so. He's very modest. He did mess with it and do some updates and some other things. But you did tell us that you dropped it off the bed a couple times, or dropped it out of your book bag or something.
Yeah, this is the third time he's fixing it. Fix up number 1 and 2, both times I dropped the computer. This third time, I didn't drop it. I just, like, when I turn it on, it was back.
It should be fixed. When he gets home, he'll show you everything, yeah. But it should be fixed.
So anyway, I guess if I run out of things to watch, I'll watch that. But I know you haven't had a chance to watch it. Man, the night of, right after Game of Thrones, is the best thing I've seen the whole
year.
It's
on HBO?
Yeah.
Night of. All right. I'll put it on the list.
No, this is the first thing you need to watch.
We just got done with The Affair, but we're pending until next season.
So did you watch season 1 and 2?
Of The Affair?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Wow, that's funny. I've been trying to finish the season 2 right now. I think it's a better watch for people actually married to watch The Affair.
Why do you say that?
Because usually the wife look at the fucking cocksucker that's sitting next to her and like, boy, you better not cheat, you know? But Night Up, that is the best show. If this is a track and field since we finished Olympic recently, a baton to Game of Thrones has passed. That is the show Game of Thrones has passed to another person. It's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. And my heart was racing the first episode. Like I could see myself making the same kind of dumb mistake.
All right, don't tell me anything more about it. I'll check it out.
And one of the characters in the show, this is how meta it was. 3-4 weeks ago when I was in New York City, it was Sunday, and I was excited about watching the show. Within a couple hours, I saw one of the actors in the show walking down the Lower East Side. Paul Sparks. So I was like, oh my God, that's so weird.
Did you say hi to him?
No, I was just like, have you ever saw somebody famous and like, oh, I know that person's name, and soon as you realize the name, that person's already gone like 5 minutes ago.
No, but
he was great. And
I've seen people before here in LA at the grocery store, actually, believe it or not, and I could not the name, but I couldn't place what show they had been on. But I've even seen Dawson from Dawson's Creek, James Vanderbeek, at the Target in North Hollywood. So
yeah. So anyway, I highly recommend it. You watch it. It's only 8 series. I guarantee it. If you watch the first episode early Sunday morning, you won't end up watching the whole thing.
Don't.
I'm not even kidding. It is that good.
I believe you, but don't push it too hard because then my expectations will be really high.
It's who was the guy who played Tony Soprano, the actor?
Oh, James Gandolfini.
He was supposed to play the lawyer in this thing, and he's also executive producer because
he passed away, though, right?
Yeah, they've been working on this thing the last 8-10 hours. It's based on the English show, and the casting is terrific, and the story, fantastic. I mean, it is John Turturro. Is that how you say his name? He's playing the James Gandolfini's
character.
Yeah. So it's phenomenal. It's highly recommended.
All right.
So let's talk for a second because you haven't had a chance to talk about
it. I wanted to talk about what you thought about the whole Olympic swimming thing.
Oh.
Because you've been to Brazil. I have not been to Brazil. I have heard the culture there as far as the government and the police is very corrupt. Supposedly, they exaggerated. I don't know if that's true or not.
I do think...
You've been to Rio. You've been to Brazil.
I went to Brazil. I went to Rio. And I'm originally from Japan. So I already feel a little bit of affinity because outside of the United States, outside of Japan, there's more Japanese living in Sao Paulo than anywhere else outside of Japan.
Really? I did not know
there's
that.
There's about 2 million Japanese. So when you go to Brazil, especially Sao Paulo, you will see people that look like me, except their first name is Gabriel or... it's just weird. Like, they speak Portuguese.
Do they have Japanese last names?
Yeah. A lot of them do. But, so, you know, it's they were even saying the Olympic ceremony when they started, that they were saying when you saw a group of Japanese walking into the stadium, they said like, well, they can't, this is kind of like a home advantage because they do have a lot of Japanese living in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like late 19th century Japan.
Why is there so many Japanese people in Brazil? What's the connection?
Because the option, for whatever reason, that the Japanese, poor Japanese that want to get out of Japan or rich Japanese who want to get out of Japan was two places, either Hawaii, maybe even California, or Brazil.
I can see Hawaii, but Brazil, I don't
they
know.
They were looking for farmers. So oh. Like sugar cane farmers, rice farming.
Rice farming. Ha ha ha.
No, seriously. That's
I know. Very petty.
They were looking for, and they were very, they made a really good transition. So there's a lot of, in fact, I think the first time when I went back to Japan after moving to United States / kidnapped by my mother over here. One of the place that my cousin took me was one of those bathhouses. You know, you take a shower, then you take a you shower, then you go into these places where hot tub kind of thing, but yes. It's separated by sexes. And there was all this like people that look like Japanese, but their mannerism was kind of a little different. And even when they speak Japanese, it sounded really different. Then I realized later on there were Japanese Brazilian that immigrated to Japan to work. So it's weird, like their ancestors left Japan to look for a new opportunity, and maybe things are not going well in Brazil, so they
go back to Japan.
Japan to work. You know, I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily permanent, but it is weird because when I saw them congregate in one area, so you see Japanese people, but you know they were doing like this fucking samba, whatever that fucking, you know, like they had like personality and movement, you know. So I thought it was really cool. But when I went to Japan, I mean Brazil, I just noticed like, oh, you know, like even Peru, Alberto Fujimori, who used to be former presidente of Peru, are one of some of the immigrants moved to Latin America, but there's a lot in Brazil.
I know what you're talking about. When I went to France, when I have been to France, the French Vietnamese have a little bit different flavor than the Vietnamese Americans over here. It's mm-hmm. just different. I wouldn't be able to put my finger on it, but you can tell.
Well, I mean, basic, I don't know if Darwinism really fits in this, but you take specific bird indigenous in one area, you take it to different continent or island, if they survive, they have offspring,
yeah.
But they're going to adapt. So if you brought those back to original place, I'm sure there's some similarity, but they'll be different, right? Because
yeah.
They change. You kind of have to change. And your brother, I've said this enough, it's just uncanny how much similar he was to my cousin Quan, except my cousin spelled it like Kwan or something. He's mm-hmm. Korean, but like, but your brother's name is spelled with Q, right?
Q-U-O-N. Q-U-A-N.
Yeah, something like that. And except for being homosexual, his mannerism, kindness, sensibility really reminded my cousin. So like, I was really happy. I really liked the guy. You know,
I'm very jealous of the French Vietnamese. They seem a little bit more elegant. And
well, that's the whole Frenchness.
Yeah,
right?
And the Frenchness.
And they speak English too already.
They do. English, usually English, French, and Vietnamese. And there's an elegance, which I don't know what that says about America, but the French, the Vietnamese versus the American Vietnamese, there's an elegance. There's a little bit of a tackiness, I think, to American Vietnamese people.
Well, I have to say, going different country over 50 different places, countries in the world, I noticed that when it comes to aesthetic, it seems like Italy, France, and in for sure in Japan too, that it's almost like a religion in those countries, you know?
Italy, it's very pronounced. I mean, I would see guys in Rome on the Vespa in like three-piece suits or like very beautiful Italian clothes, and first of all, I would be scared to ride in a Vespa dress like that. It seems like you'd get dirty. But there's just such a, I don't know, of an elegance and hipness to a lot of it. And I mean, I think you'd get beat up dressed like that over here in some places.
You know, I mean, I'm sure if anybody who is qualified, and I'm definitely not qualified, but it just seemed like Italy had this aesthetic sensibility.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
But it seemed very raw and earthly kind of beauty.
Yes.
Whereas in France, it seemed very sophisticated and...
very sophisticated.
And...
I remember our Andrew and I rented a flat, and the guy that booked us into the flat looked like a Grecian god. I mean, he was
in Italy.
In Italy.
Which city?
In Rome. He looked like a Grecian god. He was tall. He looked like someone from like the original Olympics. He was tan. He had a little bit long wavy hair.
Yeah.
And he just looked like a god. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh. And Andrew kind of said the same thing. Like, oh, that guy is really good looking. But it was very, like you said, kind of raw.
It's raw because for any of you not lucky enough to go to Rome, it is a spectacular city. It is just incredible. I mean, it's great as Paris is, and Paris is great too, but this just, I don't know how to explain it. First of all, it can be a quite dirty city, especially the subway and things like that. It's really dirty, but when you see Colosseum and all this building, I mean, literally, I'm not even kidding. When there go streets, there'll be places block off a metal fences, but there's things that sticking out of ground that's been around a time of Caligula, Julius Caesar, Cicero, and Cato the Elder.
There's like a normal,
it's unbelievable.
There's like a normal building, and then there's like, oh, there's just a statue from 5 BC right there.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Emperor Augustus, and fucking, you know, once again, Julius Caesar, and
no biggie.
Mark Anthony, and, you know, they're just like, it's just.
Well, that's what makes
amazing.
That's what makes me so upset, you know, about some of the ISIS stuff, because they're destroying a lot of World Heritage sites.
Yeah.
And they have in places, and they've destroyed a lot of ancient artifacts and other things in the name of ISIS. And yes, of course, I'm upset people are getting killed and other things, but I mean, you can't replace those items.
Yeah.
You can't replace that history. And for what? Like, what's the purpose of it? It's like, go kill each other. Don't destroy, you know.
Because last time we talked, we were going to talk about in depth, like last season 6 of Game of Thrones, you know.
And did we ever do it?
No, we didn't do it. But you know, it's been too much time been passed, and they already announced like 7 episodes next season, 6 following that. But it's I don't even know what metaphor means, but I use those fancy words. But you know, overall, there's still these different houses in the Game of Thrones, but there's a big problem with that Night King with his zombie army or whatnot. And like some people say that in all those different houses, we could use it in our time, different countries are fighting each other. But, you know, some people say that Night King and his zombies are a pretty good metaphor for climate problem and terrorism that we face, you know? Like, the countries still don't get along, even though we have this problem. And I think ISIS is a problem, but you know, it's a short-term problem. But in long-term, I mean, without even getting into science, but I just think...
You mean we're all fighting each other and we need to be focused on it?
Environment issues, it is a problem.
Issue?
I think even hardcore conservatives say it's a problem. It's just, how do you solve it? You know, if everybody just doesn't agree, but... you know, I'm 47. I mean, how much more I got? 5 years? 10? 20? 30? Whatever? I'm not going to have kids. So I guess it's a problem for...
It's a problem for the next generation.
Next generation.
They need to get on that shit now.
We're just going
to
kick the can and you guys deal
Stat.
With it. But, I don't know. At some point, I got to get serious and get better at comedy so I could make a livelihood at it. But anyway, I guess I enjoyed the last season of Game of Thrones. I really enjoyed it. It was really fun. And I can't wait till next season.
Although it's delayed till the summertime.
Yeah, because the winter scene is going to be prominent. So they have to wait a little longer
for the winter, you know, I don't know when it get really cold in Iceland and places like that. So they're making an adjustment. It'll be next summer. But Rosa, I did watch 5-part terrific documentary, and I don't want to say it's the best documentary. It's the best movie I've seen this year, OJ Made in America. And this kind of go back to things that we were talking about. But
there's a lot of OJ stuff going on right now. There's the People versus OJ.
Yeah, I saw the first episode. I'd like to watch it, but most...
Why is so much OJ stuff coming out?
I think...
By the way, isn't he in jail? Didn't he get away with murder and then go back to jail for stealing his own stuff or something?
Yeah.
In Vegas?
Yes. Well, good memory. In fact, it's at the Palace Station, and I took my friend's kid for delicious lunch. I forgot that that's the same hotel where... You know, OJ made a really bad decision to do that.
So what was the story? He stole his own stuff back or he auctioned it?
The guy who had his memorabilia and he accused him of stealing shit from him. Anyway, I guess when he says something like, nobody's leaving this room, that's qualify, legalistically speaking, kidnapping. Even though...
Really?
Yeah. Even though they went to this hotel room, the guy was actually staying in that room. But he prevented that guy from leaving his own room.
Yoshi, no one's leaving this room.
Yeah, no one. That basically became... So he got 33 years, which...
OJ?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what an idiot. I'm sorry.
That's the 33 years he would have gone if he lost in that... So it's weird. The judge forced the juror to make the decision on October 3rd, which would have been... 13-year anniversary of the verdict.
Oh my God.
So he finally got it. It's almost like a Greek tragedy in a way that...
It's not a Greek tragedy. It's him being an idiot.
Idiot, yeah.
If you get away with...
Murder.
Supposedly murder or whatever, you need to freaking live a clean life, okay? Live a clean life.
I guess I'm giving away, but one of the person at the end of the documentary kind of has second thought about OJ, this black person, but... it's weird, like you murdered two people, and I do believe he did it, and my uncle fucked up, Judge Ito. But it's weird, like he got in trouble for stealing shit and he got 33 years. Like he didn't get it for actual murder, but it really come down to defense and prosecution. It's whoever gave it the most convincing story is going to win.
Actually, it's surprising that you just talked about that because as some of your listeners know, I did deal with an issue with my neighbor. And when I was talking to an attorney and also doing research on attorney websites.
You got sued, right?
I did not get sued, but I was taken to court. It doesn't matter what happened. This is what many lawyers and also many legal blogs said, which is really scary. It doesn't matter what happened. It matters the story that you tell and the evidence you have of what happened. So I could kill you, Yoshi. I could kill you. I'm not going to. Disclaimer, in case Yoshi ends up dead. But if there's no evidence that I killed you, then I cannot be convicted of your murder. So it doesn't matter what happened. It literally doesn't matter what happened. It just matters the evidence.
So I don't understand. How did you receive a letter? You got served?
I received a letter from the LA County, and they told me that my neighbor had escalated her complaint to the highest level.
Which is what department?
It was with Animal Services because she was accusing my dog of barking. And I went to, Andrew and I went, and it was dismissed in our favor because, one, she didn't show up.
So what my understanding is, I don't understand why complain if you're not going to show up?
Because she's crazy. But also,
isn't this at the point of being harassment now?
It is, but she hasn't continued on. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
So the point is, it doesn't matter because she didn't have any evidence. So her allegations were false. But here's the thing: we had a lot of evidence. But here's the thing: it doesn't matter what happened. It matters the evidence that you bring. So again, you could kill me. You could strangle me. You know, I'm dead. But if there's no evidence that you killed me, you can't. And if you're tried and then found innocent, you cannot retry that person because someone cannot be tried for the same trial twice.
Right. So you think this is the last time you're going to hear from her?
I hope so.
I mean, we haven't heard from her since then. I think
it's so awkward, and I don't even fucking live here. It's so, I mean, I don't know how to describe. First of all, I got anyone asking me to come to animal court, I would just laugh. I said, I'm not doing that. But for Rosie, of course, I would do it. But you know, when he told me animal court, you know what popped in my head? You know those British court system where they put that funny hairpiece with the...
The wigs. Wigs
with the, you know, they're like Lord whatever, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Like in Downton Abbey?
No, way even bigger. They look like someone from like during the Revolutionary War. They put the white wig.
Yes, Yoshi, I know what you're talking about.
I thought when you say doggy court, I almost thought like they're going to have a really cute looking dog sitting as a judge. And like your dog is barking, and like, you know, like it's just crazy. Like, what? I didn't want to go, but once you told me, like, it did pique my interest. That would be kind of funny thing to go because animal court, like, how this is how rich this country is. You think they have an animal court in Africa? You know what I mean? It's so ridiculous. Like, if somebody's like, your dog is barking, yeah, motherfucker, dogs bark. That's what they do. What the fuck?
Just so you know, when we went to the final hearing,
I went to both times.
No, you didn't go to the final one with us.
Okay, first two I went. Right?
So when I went to the final hearing, actually the officer was very upset because he said that they're actually backlogged a year with real cases, serious cases where dogs have mauled people. They have never received a case for dog barking escalated to that level.
And for her to not show up.
And for her to not show up. Because they said that usually that type of escalation is literally dogs that have killed people,
yeah,
mauled people, dogs that have been left abused for, yeah, hours and hours, yeah, and hours. It's not like a little gray schnauzer barking.
Yeah.
So he said they're actually backlogged up to a year with those type of serious cases where the dog could be put down, you know, yeah, like really scary cases. There's one case where a dog bit several mailmen. So
so for her to waste everyone's time.
And that's what the hearing officer said. He basically said it was a complete waste of everyone's time. They never get dog barking cases to this level.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been even brought to this level.
And what's so funny, and her husband seemed like a reasonable guy, but what can he do? He's married to this nuts, right? But what was so funny, because it's so uncomfortable for me, and like I said, I don't live here. And like,
why is it uncomfortable for you? It's uncomfortable for me.
Because sometimes when I walk into your house, your garage is open, and you guys have to share. So like, I'm standing there, you guys doing your business, they're doing their business, and they're like, oh my God, it's so uncomfortable. They pretend like they don't see each other. Like,
we don't pretend, we just prefer not to say hello.
But like, so, you know, it makes me uncomfortable, and I wouldn't like that, but... You know, I just think...
Yeah, but whose fault is it for making it uncomfortable? It's not my fault.
So you have to fucking deal with it, and you have a better thing to... Anyway...
My point is, with your OJ thing, it doesn't matter what happened, which is crazy, because every single person thinks... This is what people that have never been in the legal system think. They think that the truth will prevail. Whatever happened is going to be revealed. No, that's not what happens. That's why lawyers always tell their scumbag... clients who are rapists, yeah, and murderers to wear a suit. Why do they tell them to wear a suit? Why do they tell them to sit up straight?
That's why you have to watch The Night Of. It's such, oh my God, it's just, I'm telling you, it's such a phenomenal show, and it covers that. But penultimate, the second to last episode, when I saw last Sunday,
don't tell me anything.
It was very ambiguous. Now I'm a little confused now. I don't know what to make of it. So last episode is like 90 minutes or maybe 100 minutes. I'm really excited. Unfortunately, I can't get HBO in fucking Europe, so I can't watch it until 3 Sundays from now. So anyway, I hope when I come back, you could watch it. And if I cannot get...
So I shouldn't watch the entire thing while you're gone and then...
Then
Instagram you spoiler alerts for the last episode.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Even though I did to everyone else, don't you do it. Anyway, it's a great show, so I hope you watch it. But OJ Made in America, it is... incredible story. It really is.
Is it a true crime? True crime drama? True crime?
It's bigger than that. It's really about America. You know, there was an incredible scene when OJ was a very popular player in USC. one of the greatest college player, but one of the best NFL player of all time. But anyway, there's this incredible scene where he's dining at this restaurant. It's him with a bunch of his friends, all black, and somebody overheard one of the white girl in the diner said, and she said, "Look, it's OJ and a bunch of niggers." That's what they say. OJ was so charming and so seductive. He seduced America. Here's the thing. White America turned around and seduced OJ too. You know what I mean? And I met OJ Simpson in 1988, summer of 88, when I went to El Camino Community College, right after graduating from Torrance High. And they were making one of those dumb HBO sports comedy. He was there. And I was awed because I didn't really know all that much what he did. I know he was a former football player, but I remember him from all the Hertz commercial. But let me tell you, Rosie, he has this magnetism. He is good-looking, athletic, and very charming, and a funny dude. And I could not believe how big his hands were. I shook his hand. It went through his hand. I mean, I think I was 18 or 19 at the time. I was a little bitch. I was a little punk-ass bitch going to, because I was too dumb to go to real college, El Camino Community College, where Suge Knight went there 2-3 years before with the football program. But it went through his hand. But like, I mean, OJ.
So what do you mean by white America seduced OJ too? What does that example have to do with it? That was a bad metaphor, Yoshi. You need to explain further.
He was, this is like late 60s where, 64, 68 Olympic, where Black Panther, those athletes raising their hands, racial tensions. Martin Luther King got killed. You know, there's a racial tension between the police. Watts Riot, when was that? 67, 60, I can't, 65, I think it was. Watts Riot. And here's a guy who was so beloved in USC. He destroyed the national championship game between the game between UCLA and USC. He was a beloved figure, and he refused to play on behalf of civil rights movement for the black athlete and speak on behalf. He was so loved by white people because he never criticized whites. And he could not be any bigger at USC in Southern California and get ready to play for Buffalo Bills. I mean, people didn't see race when it comes to OJ. You know, when he does the Hertz commercial, you'll see it in the documentary, he run across to say how great service Hertz rental car give. OJ is running through an airport and every person say, "Go OJ, go OJ, go, go OJ." It's white person, kids, white guys, white elderly woman, they love OJ and they seduced him. He never brought the black issues. He was comfortable with white people, but he was also seduced by the money, love, popularity, and all the, you know, fame that he went through, commercials and things like that. I just think this documentary was
all right. I'll check it out.
Is I mean, I still say, I mean, if I have to pick between the two, it's a very toss up. I mean, Night Of and this, it's because it's interesting. Second to last episode during the court case, they made a reference to OJ murder case in this thing too. So I hope. I think you'll figure out ways to get OJ Made in America when I come back, when I'm away. But Night Of, man, I would love to talk to you about it, and you know, maybe I'll do your podcast and talk about it. But it's phenomenal. Highly recommend it. Watch both of those shows. But OJ Made in America, they presented this year as a movie, so I hope it qualifies as Oscar Academy and Emmy. It's that good, Rosie. It's a fantastic, phenomenal. Yeah, it's great. So let's finish it off by. Have you been following what happened last week with Amy Schumer and Kurt Metzger?
I didn't follow that. Tell me, fill me in.
So I was hoping you did because I didn't really do a good job following it. But there was an improv group, some comedy show, in, I believe, in New York City. And one of the improvisational performer, male performer, male comedic actor, male improv performer, was accused by multiple women of raping them.
And Amy Schumer also accused him?
No, not Amy. So they complained, so they kicked out Kurt Metzger, very funny guy. Never met him, I don't think I met him. I think he called me one time because I think he might have got my number from David Tell or something, where they needed a porn star on the show or something. I called back. He told me to call somebody else. I called them, and I never heard back. But they needed a porn star. Anyway, he's a writer on the show. So,
what show is he a writer on? Amy Schumer Show?
Yeah. And basically what happened was he wrote something in Facebook where basically say something to the fact, just because if you're the first group of people accusing somebody, that doesn't mean they're guilty. They could very well be guilty. Well, maybe not guilty, but he was basically saying, whoever make the first accusation, and if a woman does it, or if enough women do it, and pardon me if I don't remember right, he was upset that first accusation equals guilt, and then he just went off. And I listened to something interesting by Jim Norton recently. You could respectfully disagree with somebody's position, but if you do it in a very angry manner, you kind of lose people. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's fair to say, like James Dean in porn was accused by a bunch of porn girls that he raped him. And we should not take rape as a joke. We should take, in the history, we have not done a very good job of taking it seriously, a la Bill Cosby. We should take it very seriously. But there's also been cases where women falsely accuse someone, the completely innocent guys got all this public lashing, even though they were innocent too. So we should take it seriously. But I think I agree with Jim. If you angrily say things, even if you have a valid point, people will not take it.
Anyway, so who was the angry one? Was it Kurt or the girls?
Kurt's were, the way he was saying it, it seems like he was basically saying, like, just because somebody accused, and I guess if a woman accuse somebody, it's automatically the man is guilty. Mm-hmm. And
but who was angrily making their point?
Kurt was.
Okay, got it.
Supposedly. And that's what Jim was saying. And Jim is friend with him. And of course, I'm all for accusing people. I'm all for it. I'm not a false accusation of accusing somebody when they're not true. But I think I understand why some of the women's group got angry, because it's for a long time, it's not easy for women to come in public, right? I mean, if you get robbed, why would people say, like, why were you walking down the street at 3 a.m.? Why were you wearing that? You know what I mean? Like, they would just take it as he got robbed, right? Like, they're not going to question them. But, like, if you get raped, what were you doing 2 in the morning with those guys or walking down the street in that outfit?
Well, there was...
but you know what I mean? Like,
I do, but that actually happened, and I think, to my friend, and I think women sometimes get the brunt of it. So my girlfriend was actually in New Orleans.
Yes.
And she was robbed at knife point.
Yeah.
Well, she is a tough Latina chick from, I think, Queens or the Bronx or something.
Right.
She either punched the guy or did something, got her purse back, and grabbed his knife and pulled on him.
Yeah.
And was able to call the cops.
Yeah.
Well, because she had street
smarts.
Jesus,
what's your friend's name? Rhonda Rossi? Jesus.
No, her name is Patricia. But because she had some street smarts and also was a woman and dressed up because she was going out when this happened.
Yeah.
When she called the police, they accused her of being a prostitute.
Yeah.
So she felt more victimized.
Sure.
By the police and their accusations and their questions.
Yeah.
Than the guy that tried to rob her at knife point.
Sure.
So it's not just a rape issue. It's an issue of there's a lot of not believing of women. And women out there who do make false accusations, stop, because you're freaking ruining it for anyone who has a legitimate accusation.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would make a false accusation. There's no reason for it. But, I just think that's sad that she was victimized twice just because she was wearing a dress or
absolutely.
Whatever.
So I understand there's been cases where people have been falsely accused, and I have no problem if some women accuse of some guy, but I also believe they should be given the opportunity to defend themselves. You know what I mean?
Yes, and you shouldn't be guilty until proven innocent.
Because
or innocent until proven guilty.
Because here's the thing. As soon as you're accused, you're still innocent in the eye of the law. However,
you're not innocent in the public opinion.
Yeah. So when I got in trouble in Canada, that there might be possibility that I've been accused of like taking child porn to Canada, I immediately agree, even though it's not true, that I'd rather get in trouble for working without a work permit in Canada, because I don't even have a one whiff of somebody saying, oh, did you get in trouble for child porn in Canada? You know what I mean? You know
yes,
what I mean?
Like, I do understand.
I wasn't even doing that. And I'd rather run over a kid with a car and kill the kid than falsely accused of touching kids. You know what I mean? Because that kind of shit, I mean, I will, because I'm an Asian driver too, I'll probably get away with it. That's why you really have to fight strident effort to defend your opinion, because that stuff is very, very, very serious. It could haunt you for the rest of the fucking life.
Yeah, and you can't get hired. You know, we both know a comedian who was accused. He ended up being acquitted. I'm not going to say his name in the air, but that has haunted him. He's Canadian.
Okay. Something with AR?
Yes.
Yes, okay. But acquitted doesn't mean that person's innocent either.
I think he was acquitted for lack of evidence.
Yeah.
But
that stink will follow him.
He was not convicted as guilty.
Right. But in public opinion,
he's a rapist.
Right. And two, if I had a comedy club, I don't care if the person was fighting innocent. It's I just think it's liable to have someone.
Yes,
and if he or she ended up raping somebody,
he's lost work because of it.
Now, of course, you overlook it if it was somebody of level of talent of, let's say, Louis C.K. or something. You know what I mean?
And that's happened many times. There's high level comedians that we both know that are drug addicts or troublemakers, but they keep getting overlooked because of
a talent. And I'm not even suggesting that Louis did something. I'm just saying
No. Louis,
somebody of his talent have been accused of something people overlook.
People overlook it if it sells tickets and you're making money.
Sure. You know. So anyway, I feel bad for Amy because the guy works for her and he says something that she doesn't agree with, but why she's getting earful. Like, if he says something wonderful, is she supposed to take credit for saying something smart?
So what's the deal? Amy is getting an earful from the public?
She was last week, I believe, if I remember right.
Because I didn't know the Amy Schumer connection. I just knew he worked for her.
Yeah. So like, what are you going to do about it, Amy? Like, what the fuck? Like,
because
I say something stupid, is Russell Peters and you, are you responsible because you're
no,
my friend?
No, but you know what? Amy has become, in the past few years, a bit of a feminist icon for women.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue.
Right.
I'm looking this up online, by the way.
So that's what happened. So I was just kind of curious what you thought about the whole thing.
I haven't heard much about it, but I will do research. I have been following the Louisiana flooding because my family is in the flooding. Not my mom and dad, thank God.
Yeah.
But I have cousins and aunts and uncles.
And I am concerned because my friend Sasha Gray, name dropping, is in Italy, and like 130 people die as now earthquake.
Yes, the earthquake as well. So
I hope they're doing okay. Anyway, I just thought, she's not pro-rape person, obviously.
I think she talks about how she was sexually assaulted.
Yes, in a book that she just released.
Yeah,
and I want to read that too. So anyway, she basically said like, look, he doesn't work for me because there's no more shows. I didn't know that.
Her show's canceled?
Not canceled. I don't know. They definitely did not cancel it. If she wanted to do it next 10 years, they would say yes to her. But I think maybe she's tired of doing it or something. But I don't know. That's what I read, that... I don't know why I have to be responsible for something because he doesn't work for me anymore because there's no more shows, you know. I think she's busy with movies and other shit.
She's busy with being famous and successful.
Successful, yeah. And we both like Amy because she worked really hard and, you know, I don't really know her, but she's always been good a few times.
Yes, I don't know her that well, but I think she's good. There's a lot of famous female comedians that I don't like, but I like Amy Schumer.
Yeah, she's great. So So anyway, I just thought it was unfair that she had to be responsible for something somebody said. So I want to know what you thought.
I did not know about it, but now I know. And I don't think she should be held responsible, but...
She did say, I love Kurt something something. He's a friend. But
she says, but Kurt does not work for me. He's not a writer on my show. Please stop asking me.
Yeah. And she did say something about being disappointed in things that she was saying. But, you know, that's how it goes sometimes. So I think unless you have anything else to talk.
I am sad Yoshi Denton is over.
Yeah, it's I'm not.
I'm sad that Yoshi Denton is over, and all of you listeners should be so sad too and tell Yoshi to keep going and going.
I don't know if they're listening.
I don't know if anyone's listening, but tell Yoshi, tweet at Yoshi, Instagram at Yoshi, and tell him to keep going and going and going until his little podcasting fingers that are too small for OJ Simpson's hands fall off.
No. Let me tell you, that guy have a huge hands. Unbelievably large hands. But yeah, it's fun. I think it helped me. I think it helped me doing radio shows and things, stuff like that. I'm not really worried. I think you're so self-conscious, but like, I know I rape and murder, going back to the rape thing. I murder and rape English language. But I'm just not afraid about that, and people always make fun of it. But after a while, you just get, you know, you get over it, you know.
I think your English has gotten a lot better since we've known each other. I could barely understand you when we first met.
I think I was mumbling a lot, but anyway.
You were mumbling a lot.
I think if you tell people honest God truth, it's coming from your heart, and not trying to be fake and not be politician, I think people are okay, you know.
Yoshi, you're the opposite of a fake person. You don't need to worry about that.
So that's where I'm at, and I'm really looking forward to finishing the second to last one. The name of the podcast is BSF. That's it.
What does the B and the S and the F stand for?
They could figure out once you listen to that one.
All right.
And if I can get Len Shawcroft, Mitch Hedberg's wife, a good friend of mine, and for the last episode, then I'll just thank everyone. And unless something dramatic happened, I'll find something awesome. But of course, you're awesome. But yeah, that's it. Two more episodes, you, mine, then the last episode. So hopefully it's done by late September, which is incredible, weaselly thing to do, because I've been saying I'm going to end it since last September, you know. So
all right, anyway. Well, thank you for having me, Yoshi.
Rosie, thank you very much for doing it. Anything big coming up for you, fun?
You guys can follow me on Twitter at FunnyRosie. Listen to Out of the Box Podcast. I have David Lay coming up. He is a clinical psychologist that specializes in sex, and we talk a lot of fun sex stuff.
You already did it.
I already did it. Yeah. It's in the editing bin, and it will be released soon. So please go on outoftheboxpodcast.com and click follow, subscribe, go on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and then you guys can hear that when it comes out in the next few weeks.
Is there anything that some of my fans that could do for you? Like, is there something that you want to do, but you need help with something right now? Besides money. You know, Make-A-Wish Foundation is really uncomfortable, but they want to give a wish to a kid, and the first thing kids always ask is like, can you get rid of my cancer?
Aww.
That's when they laugh, and I'm like, come on kid, let's be real.
If you guys really really want to help me, really please just follow me on Twitter and subscribe to the podcast and leave positive comments. I have a good amount of comments, but I need more.
Yeah.
So that the podcast can be elevated on iTunes.
And thanks for having me on your show. And I would like to thank my friend Hyung Cho and Susan Cho. They're in Indonesia, New Zealand, Australia right now, but they were very kind to my our friend William Chen, Stan Chen's son. And by the way, Russell Peters never say William Chen. It's always Stan Chen.
All right, we got to wrap up.
Okay, Andrew's here. So anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. And Rosie, thanks for doing the last one. And honest to God, this is the last time she'll be on. And and then I'd like to thank everyone for supporting the show. And please help support Rosie. So please, I definitely would like to hear a story where Rosie and her husband go to Vietnam. I really want to hear that. That would be kind of interesting story. Like, I really want to know what's that going to be like. So anyway, thanks for listening, and talk to you guys soon. Bye.